I'm Robin Miller Brecker.
And I'm Karen Lenzer. Welcome to Seeking Center, the podcast.
Join us each week as we have the conversations and weed through the spiritual and holistic clutter for you. We'll boil it down to what you need to know now.
We're all about total wellness, which to us means building a healthy life on a physical, mental, and spiritual level. We'll talk to the trailblazers who'll introduce you to the practices, products, and experiences that may be just what you need to hear about to transform your life.
If you're listening to this, it's no accident. Think of this as your seeking center and your place to seek your center. And for even more mega inspo, sign up for Seeking Center, the newsletter at seekingcenter.app. Dr. Therese Rowley is a force. There is truly no one like her. She's been a business consultant, skilled intuitive, innovative educator, healing practitioner, and spiritual medium for over 30 years. Dr. Rowley has performed thousands of intuitive readings and facilitated energetic healing for business leaders and professionals, as well as those on a spiritual or conscious path. She's developed the Rowley method of intuitively reading and healing in the quantum field. Her intuitive coaching and readings employ quantum physics theory to engage your energy remotely, and she facilitates healing and realignment through quantum entanglement, which I experienced and we will definitely be discussing. Dr. Rowley has a PhD in organizational transformation from Union Institute and University, an MBA from Northwestern University, and a master's in public administration from the University of Denver. She has also done extended study in somatic psychotherapy and over 50 different healing modalities. She's the author of Mapping a New Reality, Discovering Intuitive Intelligence. In it, she says, there is a map of reality that lies within each of us. And when we can learn to use it, we can transform pain and persistent challenges into inner gifts and positive life purpose. We could talk to Dr. Rowley for days. So we're going to be packing a lot in this episode around intuitive intelligence, quantum physics, and as she says, breaking open the status quo boxes within a person, a group, or a business so they can experience an expanded reality, one where they can find that they can play a nobler role in a bigger world than they could have previously imagined. Hi, Therese.
Hi, Robin. How good to see you. Thanks for having me, Karen.
We're so glad you're here. So much to unpack.
I can't wait.
Let's start with intuitive intelligence. How do you define that?
First of all, I really appreciate that people are asking that question these days, because there was a time when intelligence only meant academic intelligence, rational intelligence. And since then, we've learned that there are many different kinds of intelligences, and often social and emotional intelligences are named. We can say that after Daniel Goleman's book that was on the bestseller list for 30 years, Emotional Intelligence, that leaders are better leaders if they're emotionally intelligent compared to if they're only IQ, as in academically intelligent. And so we know how big a role it plays in allowing us to be better leaders. What's less emphasized is what's underneath emotional intelligence, which is intuitive intelligence. And that allows us to access the wisdom that each of us holds as unique beings that we can then bring forward both for our own well-being as well as for the well-being of groups and even companies and corporations. So intuitive intelligence is really understanding the kinds of ways we know what we know, so that we can better access and be at choice for what decisions we make, instead of feeling like we say, this is just me. No, this is you that doesn't know all the other kinds of ways that you can bring forward your wisdom. So that's what that's all about.
So Therese, can you just bridge the discovering intuitive intelligence with mapping a new reality? Because when Robin read the intro, I'm sure a lot of ears perked up when they heard those words, map a new reality. Like, how do I do that? So how did the two work together?
Great question. I call it mapping a new reality because I think all of us live in a reality that sometimes we've been bequeathed by those who are in our families. And this is the way we do things around here. It's how our neighborhood works. This is how the kids we know do things. This is how I grew up. This is me. That's my map of reality. It has boundaries. Oh, we don't do that. Or oh, we don't go there. We don't talk to those people because we're us. So we've defined an us, and it's often a primal us that keeps intact the group that we identify with. That if we act that way, that must be us. And we do that even in social media. Oh, that person's the hot chick, and that person's because of the way they dress and because of the way they talk, we know. So that's a map of reality. But we can map new realities the more we understand our capacities to grow in different ways, to perceive in different ways, and and to include really the understanding of different contexts. Because if we continue to live in the context we've always lived in, that's the world we always know. That's why when people say traveling is so important, we say, wow, you think that's important? Oh, you think that's fun? I didn't even think that was fun. And then I did it and thought, oh, it could be fun for me too. So now I have a different context in which to perceive reality. If we do that from the inside out, we have all kinds of ways to know that we don't know what we don't know. And then we can actually bring that out and help share it with others. So the idea is to bring it from the invisible to the visible so that we can make choices. We can define our map of reality differently. We can include more. Maps of reality tend to be expansive. The more we understand through intuitive intelligence, through the ways, the portals through which we perceive reality, the bigger our world can be. Why? Because our maps are usually defined by our gifts and fears. And the fears usually define what goes outside the boundary. Yeah, our family doesn't like them because they're scary folks. And they threaten us by calling us this name and we're afraid of them. So there's the boundary. When we see things in a different context, intuitive intelligence, it helps us to accept the truth of what is. That, by the way, that's their narrative and this is just ours. And they're afraid of that and I'm afraid of this. I can heal the places I'm afraid of. And then that allows me to broaden my reality, my map. And someone comes in and says the same thing and it doesn't land with me. That's about me. It lands with me that, oh, that's how they're afraid and that's what they think. Perfect. That's what the journey they're on. I'm not there anymore. So through intuitive intelligence, I expand my map of reality.
I just wish that we all learned this when we were much younger.
Me too.
Yeah.
Me too.
So do we embrace of other people's beliefs that aren't even our own. And then we forget that there are other beliefs and they're not our own.
And if you learn this in preschool and kindergarten, you know, when kids perceive things, we adults get scared, put them in a box and no, honey, you don't see that. No, you don't have to feel that way. No, it's okay not to feel like we're helping them to narrow their map of reality right away. According to our fear, we narrow their reality. And so then that's how children become teachers, because sometimes they insist on not narrowing their reality to our fear. And then we have to look at our fear instead of trying to get them to accommodate us. Right? I can attest to that as a parent.
Yes. And take us back, because you talk about being an old soul as a child and starting to have some of these extra perceptive gifts, which you may not have even at that time obviously called them that. How did that all begin for you? And when did you know that what you were seeing or feeling might be different than others?
I do address this in my book, the beginnings of it, because I do want people to understand that everyone comes to their understanding definition of intuition in different ways. And so my way was that every person's way is unique. And mine happened to be really because of my mother. And my mother was a force, as gracious, gentle, and firm as any Irish mother of 11 children could be. And she would go to mass every morning. And I wanted alone time with her when I was 5 or 6. And so I asked her if I could go with her at 6:30 in the morning. And she let me. And that was that. So as soon as I walked into the church with my mother and she kneeled down and I looked around, I thought, oh, this is familiar. I was literally feeling like this was home to me. It wasn't a new weird place. It wasn't cold. I was like, oh, absolutely. And I remember doing this when I was 6. Actually, I do remember when I was 3 years old, sitting on the back porch thinking, why do people get to do things that they know are wrong and they get away with it? I remember I was 3 years old thinking, shouldn't there be consequences? So old souls usually have these sort of thoughts when they're very young people, because they're in touch a little bit more with what was behind the veil before they left than others. And then I went to church and I watched the priest and I thought, oh, I've done that. And it wasn't a weird thought to me because I was only 6. It wasn't like I had any other map that said, that's not okay to think that way. I thought, I know how to do that. I knew that. And there were certain gestures he would make that would be not just remembering, but compelling. It was a compelling feeling, like, oh, I want to do that. It was a craving because I know that and I loved it. And so it compelled me into a very mystic connection with the divine. From that point on, I was at mass every day for 20 years. And somewhere around 9 years old is when I felt taken out of body. When they at mass, when they're doing what Catholics call the change of the bread and wine into the realization of the energy of Christ, I would be particularly taken and then taken out of body. I wouldn't have described it that way at that time. Of course, I would just be like I was with angels and Jesus and I would see the world and I would be a kid in a big world. I would be looking at them like they were doing their thing and I was just looking around. But after a while, I was given assignments to be more disciplined in my focus. And it allowed me, with 10 brothers and sisters, I had a lot of material. There's like a lot of opportunity there. So every day it was the little things. Are you attached to that cup? Then let it go and give it to someone else. But it's, I want to, but I like it, but it's mine. Give it to someone else. Share that with someone else. Become detached. And a lot of the discipline was, how do you become detached from your emotional preferences so that you can be more loyal to the voice within you than you can be to the situation that ends up outside of you. So I was constantly under that kind of practice. And how do you trust what's inside of you such that if you're saying yes to that's the first priority and commitment, that then when you're with other people and you feel moved to say something and it makes no sense to you, but if you're loyal here, you say it anyway, and then you back off with the results because it's none of my business, because I'm not saying yes to making them feel better or more insightful. I'm saying yes to the impulse that comes through me to serve. So that's where the loyalty was built over time. And that's how I started this. When I was 14 years old, I was at Mass and I heard an intuitive intelligence called clairaudient, which means that you get your wisdom through words as opposed to pictures or feeling. I do it through all of them, but primarily through words. And the words were that things would be different between myself and spirit at the age of 21. And I was only 14. And I was like, okay, that's bad because that doesn't sound good to me. But I just put it in the back burner until it happened. And then I was in college and I turned 21 and I went to a prayer meeting that I went to it all regularly at the Newman Center. And I had no idea what people were talking about. I kept thinking, what are they doing? They were praying. And I'd been there every single week. Lots of times I would say something. I came to my turn. I looked around and thought, I have no idea what to say. So it was like spiritual amnesia happened. And then everything went dark. The only thing I did say is, did I do something wrong? I lost my ability to see through things into their meaning, to hear what was the right thing to say, to be able to see. I lost all of it at once. And I thought I must have done something terribly wrong. I need to like volunteer more, or I need to be a better person, or I probably offended somebody and God's going to smite me. I don't know. But I heard the gifts that I give to you are not gifts that belong to you. They're the gifts that I give you. So it's mine to give and mine to take away. And I was like, all right, then I get to have this reality. And it's not too different than when people are going along in their life and they're so excited and suddenly they have an accident. They can't use a limb. And for the rest of their lives, it's taken from them. The way of perceiving and being in the world is gone. They have to do it another way. And we actually go through this, all of us. We go through puberty or menopause, or we get married, or all of it changes everything. So we all know what that's like to be in a space where, oh, this is one thing. And then all of a sudden it's another. And I did have a sort of deep spiritual depression, which is just that all the color went out of the world and the sound went out and it wasn't exciting anymore. And I was going along, but I couldn't explain it to anyone because I wasn't psychologically depressed. I was spiritually depressed because I missed the connection that I had. And the only thing I heard was when I said, what do I do now? I heard, read the autobiography of St. Teresa of Avila. Teresa of Avila was a mystic in the church. So I started to read her autobiography in college. It was funny because I was on my way home and I was reading it and I missed the train that I was supposed to take. And I was really mad that I'd missed my train and mad at myself. But it ended up that I read the whole book. And I thought, I probably wouldn't have read the whole book if I had missed the train. What she described was the dark night of the soul. And how when we're maturing, we have to have things that are familiar to us taken away so that we have the opportunity to see the world with fresh eyes, to begin to define them differently, and to find out what a priority or preference would be in a world that has no map, right? My map of reality had to change. There is no choice. So the question was, what is of value in a world where you can't find any value? And that's why I began to study. And my search was, what's the fastest way to transform possible as a human being? What methodology would help transform this malaise into something meaningful? I was trying to find a way to heal myself. And I ended up studying over 50 different kinds. And what happened was that my conclusion for that was, which is what I studied, was somatic psychotherapy, which is body-centered psychotherapy. And I learned that the fastest way to transform anything is the gentlest, kindest, quietest way. We're so used to being blasted, breakthroughs like that. But I found that the gentler and the more accepting and the kinder the intervention, the more the body would give way to opening so that wisdom was more available. And so that's why I studied psychotherapy. I had 16 months of training, but I never got my license in it. I just needed to get some of the maps down so in myself so I could understand what was going on and how to help myself and others with that. And then it was a matter of trying to navigate the ways that energy would come to me and through me. This voice would come through me, or I would start to automatically write what was happening in the future. And I had no idea what to do with this because my map of reality was Catholic. There are no past lives in Catholic. There's a dichotomy. But I have to say, even as a Catholic, I knew I was not a dogmatic person, that I didn't care about the rules. I cared about the mystic connection. Any church, any faith tradition, I don't care, Jewish and Muslim, whatever it is, the church is there to facilitate that dynamic connection, that individual unique portal between each person and the divine. And so if you have that, then you don't go backwards to say, did I get 7 right on that Sunday? So I started to find out that when energy came through me, it didn't come in a form that I could then say, this is okay with the paradigm I used to have, because it wasn't. I'm looking through everything. I always relied on, and there was no story to help me. So I had to go beyond the Catholic map, expand my map of reality, which always when you're expanding your map feels wrong, bad, and you should be ashamed of yourself, that kind of thing. And then you know you're on the right track. So the bottom line is I continued to study all of the things I've done and all the things in my MBA and my PhD all were about. And my PhD was shepherding the corporate soul through transformation. So I combined the energy work with what the spirit of the organization was, because an organization looks just like a person. That you have a head, heart, and gut, and they all tell you different things and you're confused. You have the marketing department, you have HR, you have manufacturing, they're all telling you different things. It's just a body, where corporate means body. And so it's about how do you bring all of that into harmony. So it started through that spiritual connection for me. And then it became something that I had to translate into language that was more focused on energy, which took me to some quantum physics, which took me back to how do I define intuitive intelligence, but at soul level. So when I do readings, I'm reading people's souls. I don't go to the police and help them find who's missing. I don't tell them what someone on the other side is wearing or what they used to wear. I tell them what their contract was, why they're learning, why they chose to learn with that person. What's the purpose of that? So everything, it hasn't changed. I'm just doing priestly work in a different window dressing. So nothing's changed and everything's change. Depends on how you perceive it.
I love how you just said, I'm doing priestly work. So it's like that priest up there that you knew exactly what to do. You're still doing it anyway. I was so fascinated, first of all, by the fact that Carolyn Miss wrote the intro to your book, which says right there how great it is. But I love the sentence where she said, very few intuitives have been able to make it through the scrutiny of the rational corporate keyhole and earn the respect of people whose focus is business survival. I just thought that was just such an amazing observation. And a great transition to talking about your work in corporate. The fact that your PhD was around shepherding the corporate soul through transformation, like corporate and soul, I wouldn't put those two words together.
In fact, Carolyn was one of the ones that helped me name that dissertation. I've always loved business as much as I've loved kind of my spiritual work. And I never knew why, but I could not give it up. I absolutely love business. It makes me happy. I love strategy, complexity. I love industry. I did industrial white papers on industries. And I think because maybe being a mystic, being a person who relates to spirit in a broader way that can go out of body, business is a beautiful way to be able to play human within the confines of a structure someone else creates. In fact, it's a collective that creates that structure. And they agree to it and they play by their own rules. I find that not only elegant, but I find it so helpful for me because there's the boundary of the map. And if we want to map a new reality in business, we learn the vision, mission, values. I used to say to CEOs, we can talk about your business or we can just talk about you. Either way, the micro and macro is the same. The company can only grow to the capacity of the leader's consciousness. That's what I've learned in doing large-scale systems change for over 30 years. The fears that the leader has is how limited the organization is. And if I can help or facilitate that leader to break through their fear, to open to understanding, loving themselves more, and seeing their own gifts, finding self-compassion, they then come back to their organization with that opening and give other people permission to do the same, which allows the culture to expand into something that will accommodate and invite everyone's gifts to the table. I can read from here to Sunday, anything, anywhere, anytime, but I'm only doing it in service of the advancement of their spiritual evolution. That's my mission. I'm not here for any other reason. So that's what's important to know is how do we help both the organization to understand itself in a more expanded way and to accommodate more contribution and to acknowledge that contribution so it can be enhanced? Or how do we help the leader to open out from their fear and move into a place of greater acceptance of themselves, which allows acceptance of their company, which allows more creative strategies to accompany that corporation or that business? We have to befriend our fear because there's beautiful things underneath it. But until we choose to be brave enough to face that fear, that part of us we don't see. So someone on the outside isn't going to see us because as above, below, as within, so without. How we see ourselves, how we're in relationship with ourselves is how others are in relationship with us. So whatever we're hiding, even if we're not aware of it, they don't see us. It's the foundational piece of how you honor yourself and therefore create your reality and your map of reality.
Therese, unbelievable. So we're going to just move a little bit to the Rowley method that you've created. When I had my session with you, you are, and granted, I know I'm quite open to all of this, right? And I have some experience with it. However, when you speak to your soul, even if you are just have the door open a little, then it's so familiar. And just speaking about actually what happens, which also you combine what is going on energetically, that our energetic system, in addition to the quantum field. Can you talk about that? And when we talk about the quantum field, I know you and I talked about this, which is that what some people may call a past life, that's to be determined, right? Because it could actually all be going on at the same time. They could be parallel lives. But there are certain ones that come up at a very specific time to help your soul evolve in this lifetime. So I'll leave it there.
Yeah, exactly. And you'd ask about my method. And I say I call it the Raleigh method because I'm just that creative. I haven't come up with something cool. But because everything starts with the individual, the method helps us to understand how to operate our body as a tool, as a companion, as a good friend to the energy of love that wants to be expressed through us. So first we learn all of the ways in which we know what we know and honor those. Then we can expand the ways we know what we know and decide that we can use them. I talk about four kinds of intuitive intelligence that are pretty common and pretty commonsensical. I'll give you an example. I was doing this with my students this morning. You can put a situation that might be difficult for you in front of your third eye, located between your two eyes and down from the crown of your head. It's the one that most people know about. It's called clairvoyance. It means clear seeing. It doesn't mean crazy. And when you put it out in front of your third eye, the function of the third eye is to tell you the truth in neutrality. There is no feeling in it. There are no words in it. It's pictures, symbols, and images. It comes through the function of the eye. It's dreams, it's visions, it's that sort of thing. So when you can put a situation that's difficult for you, it could be with you, could be with you and someone else, could be just two people that you're looking at, and you put it 2 feet out in front of you and close your eyes and look through this portal, this perceptive sight, and you ask, what's important for me to know, or what's the truth of what's going on here? Your third eye can tell you. Now you could use your heart then and bring compassion to that. You could bring it down to below your belly in your second chakra, which is your empathy, and say, how do I feel about that? Or you could say, what do I know about this person and situation from my heart? Those are all different functions. Those are all different kinds of intuitive intelligences. So when we talk about the energy, we have to get into things like quantum physics, because that's their field of energy. And quantum physics is trying to make sense of the invisible in a way that the human mind can understand and the logical mind can understand. And there are many theories because, of course, you can't concretize the invisible. You can only theorize it, and you can agree on it. You can have many people agree that they see the same thing. You can look at the chakra system, because that's what 4,000, 6,000 year old Hindu system of consciousness that people say over time they have agreed to, that they all see the same sort of thing. So that the vibrations of color and sound and the location in the body are all coordinated. That's a system of reading. I use it as an overlay. So when I look through something and I see somebody with a story that's somewhere, it's there for a reason in that particular part of their body. It's stored in a particular part of their body for a reason. So the chakra system gives you little hypotheses about why that might be there. Then you can read deeper and more energetically to find out the specifics. But the quantum field says that there is no time and space. And this is so interesting to me, because if you go to YouTube, you can find so many people who have had their young kids. In fact, when I was on the Dr. Oz show, on the radio show, and the guy who was doing the interview before me was Jim Tucker. He did studies of 2,500 children under the age of 5 who have remembered their past lives. And the evidence that they have is irrefutable. You cannot say that there's no way that doesn't happen, because it's been validated from the facts. And yet, if quantum physics says there's no time and space, then how do we explain past lives? And incidentally, even being Catholic, at some point I wondered, why in the Bible did Jesus ask the apostles, who am I? And they said, some people say you're Elijah. Why would people say he was Elijah? Elijah died a long time ago, unless they believed in reincarnation. Why would they say that? All of a sudden, it was like, wait a second. So anyway, the idea is, there's a book called, and Jane Roberts wrote this trilogy, The Nature of Personal Reality, by, it was channeled by a guy named Seth. And one of the things he does is he wrote a book on the education of Oversoul 7. And in that book, he talks about how one Oversoul sends itself out over a timeline, so that the discovery of fire, whenever that was in BC, is related to the first rocket to the moon in 1969. And there's a connection. And so that these connections have been spun out over a lifetime so that this Oversoul can learn about itself, which is a lovely story. And one way that the human mind can just simply understand this idea of the temporal in relationship with the eternal. And so the only way that I see this as relevant when I'm doing a reading is if I see a story in your field. And what you said, Robin, is really relevant. Because when I tell a story, Even if it was similar to another story, it will resonate, that is, energetically resonate with you at a level that you will say yes at a deepest level possible that's called truth for you. And it's sitting in your field, even people call them past lives, they say, but you're still operating out of the belief system that was born in that particular story. So it's not past, it's present, because you're still operating out of it. That's unhealed. So I call that present. And the idea is, how do we take, if you're still operating out of it, and it's a fear, and we go in and move that fear out, and you decide with your free will, that's no longer relevant to my learning. I'm going to learn a different way and a new path, and I forgive whatever I've done or whatever's done to me, and I move on, because forgiveness is humanity's gift to moving on. Then I can resonate with that as an old map of reality and let go of it and open to new possibilities. So then when you look at that field, is no longer visible. The picture's gone. The story is gone because it's resolved. If you ever saw the TV series Ghost with
Jennifer Love
Hewitt, yeah, she would see between worlds and ghosts would come to her because they were unresolved. She would resolve it and you would always see them go into the light. You always see this no matter what movie you're looking at. So some consultants are informing these television shows about this and they move into the light because they're finished. Right? With a particular aspect. So that's why when I see people, they have completed something and it happens to be, let's say, in an ancestral pattern, they've cleared everything going forward in their generations and everything ancestrally behind them. So it clears because you're brave enough to look into the face of fear. And what you're really doing, the bravest thing that you can do is trust that you're completely and utterly loved. And in order to do that, when we release those fears, we have to open to that possibility, much scarier than the fear, much scarier. So that's what it takes to be brave, to believe that we're truly loved unconditionally. And completely and utterly and eternally. That's the big challenge for...
Yeah, yes. And I would say too, we all, I think, continue to need to be reminded of that. Like I may be in a space right now where I know that, but talk to me in a few months from now.
talk to me in a few minutes from now. Kind of any given day.
For those who might be listening to all this and fascinated, can you just talk through then, what is a session with you like? Like, how do you do it? How do you work with your clients?
And again, what I love to do is teach this so people can do this for themselves. When I do a reading, I am primarily a clairaudient, which means I get information through words. I'm not channeling. That's different. If you ever saw the movie Ghost with Demi Moore and Patrick Swayze, when Whoopi Goldberg, that guy comes into her and goes, whoa, I love your hair. That's channeling. When she looks at Patrick Swayze and he says, I've got this penny, tell her it's mine. He says, she's got this penny and it's yours. That's clairaudience. She's repeating what she hears. That's what I'm doing. I'm repeating what I hear. It's the difference. So I know I can get everyone's file by the sound of their name. All they have to do is tell me their name. And I don't really need their name, but it helps. It clarifies. I always say, tell me your first, middle. And if you're a woman, first, middle, maiden, married, however many times you did, right in a row, because your name is a mantra. Whenever you have a name, people call you that every day. So your experiences rest on your name. I have done readings from people in United Arab Emirates, in China, in Japan, and everywhere in the world. And I can hear the sound of someone's name. And sometimes I'll just say, for example, your name sounds like jewelry to me. And I'll say, my name means jewel in my language. So I can hear the intent of the vibration. That's what that is. So I have then holographic information about thoughts, feelings, beliefs, fears, et cetera, just from the sound of someone's name. So I don't need to know anything about them. I don't need to know their pictures or touch anything because it's all clairaudience. But then, of course, I use those other intuitive intelligences to feel into the field when I'm doing healing. And that's the other part of the Raleigh method. The first part is just to identify the body as a way to perceive and to receive information in the quantum field, which means that all of us are in the quantum field, if we want to call this, all energy is the quantum field. And there's a unique signature, like a signature in space. And I'm tuning in through a sound of a name to the signature in space that you are. And the more you say your name, I ask people to say it three times. It's Star Trek, the transporter. The person's almost in there, not quite. And they're all, so they say their name, I go, okay, there it is. And when people's strategy for survival is not to be seen, I have to ask them to say their name several times because the whole point of their strategy is don't look at me, don't see me. And so I'm trying to see them. I'm going, come on, come on, come in. Same with people on the other side. Come into this frequency, I can read you. I'm reading them holographically. And I'm still a business person, so I'm looking at objective and deliverable. The objective of the exercise is I'm having these symptoms. The deliverable is I'd like to experience life this way. Great. Okay, now I have the territory. So I'm going to look into the quantum field, into the place in which the root of that fear and fear-based belief are preventing you from moving in that trajectory in your path. And I'm going to look at all the stories that keep you holding on to those fears. As I said in the first part, we talked about my map of reality I'm bequeathed. I pick this family because I either feel super safe with them or I feel super unsafe and I know how I need to get out of here. So I'm looking at all of that in your field. I can read anything. And the idea is to get to the fear-based beliefs and your essential gifts, because typically your essential gifts cover up your fears. In other words, if I'm afraid that I don't deserve to be loved, and I take exquisite care of you because I think you should be taken care of and not me, you're not going to say, hey, why don't you explore taking care of yourself? You're going to go, thanks. I'll have some more of that. Yeah, your strategy is working great for me. I'm not going to question you about that. And I'm going to attract people who need to be taken care of. So that's a beautiful way to take a gift and cover up a fear. So when they finally get overwhelmed, I can't take anymore. Everybody wants this from me. You go, oh, let's look at your feeling of unworthiness. What story binds you that says, no, I'm not worthy. And I vowed or promised never again that I would allow myself to be taken care of, but I will take care of others. Let's blow that system open and look at that story and then decide. You can say it's happened maybe 3 times in 12,000 or 13,000 readings that people have said, no, I don't want to change. And it's perfectly fine. The universe is infinite. There's no judgment and patience is everywhere. Spirit's ever patient. You decide. It's when you're ready. So it doesn't matter. So that's how we do a reading. And then we go to the end. If it's my clients who have been there, if I get CEO clients and they have one question and they know where they're going with it, we can do a 30-minute session and I can tie that up. But typically when first-time people, when they're trying to figure all this out, we go to the 90 minutes and then that blows open. Now, if you've been all your life ignoring your feelings because you're a very amazing executive and you get a lot done, you come to a place where life invites you to include self-compassion and mercy and kindness and gentleness and flow, which is not familiar. So once we blow open this and honor that you have created this situation out of your fear, but what an amazing life you've had and given as a result of that. Now you get to have this if you want it. But now if you want it, energetically, you're not wired to accommodate that. So I give energetic exercises, such as what does it mean to open the crown of your head? Open, allow, and receive. 3 muscles. Open, allow, receive that most people just don't have. And the greatest skill, I say, in all of my practice, the greatest skill is staying. Stay with your discomfort. Discomfort is a signal that there's some wisdom that wants to be uncovered. Stay with the fear. Stay with the things you don't want to stay with. That's the highest skill you can have in anything. In any relationship, walk away. No, yell back. No, stay. Just stay until you get it. Stay till your heart says yes. Stay till the truth says yes. That's the highest skill. And that's the most important skill. Open, allow, receive, stay. That's not what we learn. We learn defend, walk away, create distance. And we know how to do that, which is great. Boundaries are good. Boundaries are great. I teach boundaries, but we want to make that choice. Let's stay. Let's see what's transforming to a place where we're complete. When we know we're complete, let's finish that then. And let's honor what we've had and complete it and then move on. So that's how I do a reading.
And I can say too, having experienced a reading, is that you really do help then, as you said, complete and change the going forward, right? Because you have honored whatever has been holding you back. And so that there's a new contract.
That's right. New contract. And there is healing. So that's the entanglement in the quantum field. That's the second half of my methodology. Once you're really clear about how to perceive and how to receive without it impacting your feelings or without falling into the story, and you can do it with some sense of neutrality, compassion, I call compassionate neutrality. That's what we're going for. And once you can observe that and be in that field, now what you want to do is be able to respectfully and with permission entangle. The highest power you have is asking permission. So it's important because you never want to decide that because I have a gift and you should have it because I know it. I have a gift. It has nothing to do with you. Unless I get your permission, because you're the one that knows if you're ready and want it, and I don't. So it's a relationship. So permission asking is very important. So I'm asking permission, and then I'm going to entangle in the quantum field. Once I'm really solid in who I am and my distance, now I'm going to entangle in the quantum field. What does that mean? I don't care if you're in Switzerland or you're here, because quantum physics tells us that healing is non-local, that we can entangle in each other's fields without it being physically present. That's part of what we learn from quantum physics. So I can move into entangle in certain parts of the field where I can see what's going on very specifically and how someone has completely wired their field to accommodate their fear. How do I then enter that field and release those things with permission? And really then also, I'm telling people exactly what I'm doing. I'm in this part, I'm in this chakra, I'm in this part of your body. This is how you've wired it. This is why you have stomach aches. This is why you don't feel good in these times. And this is how. Okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to wire it. But now I understand it. I don't want to really heal. On occasion, I have where someone is really in need of being in the ER and I just do the healing. But otherwise, I want people to understand so that when they get to a place of being stuck again, they can say, how do I do this for myself? It's important for me to be able to have agency with how I map my reality.
And I'll say too, just having had the session with you, I feel different. There is a confidence and a lack of fear that I have, that I notice, and a groundedness in my everyday right now, in a time where there's a lot of crazy going on all around me, personally and collectively. And yet I feel more grounded than I've ever felt. And I was just saying that to Karen this morning. I can't really explain it except to say that since our session together and since I've been doing the work that you suggested that I do, I have a different perspective and I feel different. So I feel like there has truly been a new reality mapped for me.
You have mapped the reality because you chose to be brave enough to look at your fear, to ground even when there's no evidence that it's safe around you. And the spiritual evolution really goes to one goal, and that is to become more loyal to the trust that you are here to enact a purpose of your own making. And that as you're loyal to that, and it's akin to this, I have an amazing client who is also in one of my classes. The first time I met him, I looked at him, I said, wow, you could go in the front lines of anything and no one would shoot you. See, he had protection all over him. He said, I know, that's why I work with the people in the front line of Afghanistan. I think about how Mother Teresa, she walked in the face of war, this little tiny person, and no one shot her. Now, why? Because she has built the presence to say, this is truth. These people matter. I will stand for it. And that's so powerful that people with big guns aren't shooting, aren't saying, oh, forget that, and disrespecting it, because her presence that she has cultivated by trusting unequivocally that she is protected, because what she is doing is her mission. And it is more important than her sense of what around anybody else's fears are or what they feel is safe. She's picking people who are dying up off of the ground. How do you think she feels about that? She used to say, do you think this is easy? Do you think I like it? But her loyalty and her commitment and her desire to be loyal to that purpose she has was more important and more compelling than anybody else's fear. And that's what we're all aiming for. We're all aiming to get to a place where we're more committed to why we're here and to loving the way we chose to love than we are to bowing to anyone else's fears around us or our own, and to healing those fears so we can continue to love in a way that's absolutely optimal in who we are in this unique place and time and this unique humanity that we've chosen.
I'm going to ask a question that I know Karen really wanted to ask you. It has to do with defining meditation and prayer. And if you see them differently, or if you see them working together, and is there more power in meditation if you put in quotes an ask to it? And Karen was asking that because she too grew up in the Catholic Church and she was deeply entrenched in prayer. She wanted your opinion on that in terms of meditation and prayer.
Meditation, it allows us to move into neutrality so we can open to the possibility of everything in life. It clears the field because typically in meditation, you're allowing space for the things that the noise and distraction cover up to emerge. That means that things I'm afraid of, if I keep talking to my neighbor about their problems or I keep going into social media, I won't notice my fear. And then if I stop and I breathe, eventually the ground swell comes up and I get to face how I feel that I'm ignoring. And that is another way to encounter our fear. And the Buddhists would say simply stay with that fear or that feeling and be brave enough to stay with it, and it will dissipate because all life changes. And so that allows us to heal. Meditation is a great opener. I found it to be helpful in being able to perceive things with greater neutrality. It trains the brain in neutrality. It trains it to value silence and neutrality and what comes up in the space between words and paragraphs. And because we want to say, even when we're in what's called generative dialogue and listening to people, generative dialogue is actually to have a conversation with someone where you say something and they wait and they say, let me see how that strikes me. They go on the inside and say, this just reminds me of this and this. And they don't know what they're going to say until they let it go in. And then they say it to someone else and they have to wait. That's generative because we don't know what's next. So space allows generativity, which is the original creation, to rise in us. It makes space for creativity. Prayer is more active and it's also more partnership based. You're entering a relationship with spirit in a very more sort of human way, if you will, that we know about relationships as human beings and how important they are. And this is a relationship with spirit that allows our hearts to grow because it's growing inside of a structure, if you will, like prayer, that says this is a safe place. And this is a place that allows us to examine what happens after we feel safe. Because most of the time we walk around in life, many people walk around feeling unsafe. And you can either be creative or you can be safe, focusing on your safety, you're focusing on creativity. You can't do both. If you feel unsafe, all you're doing is defending yourself. That's what Einstein said. The most important question we can ask is, the universe a friendly place? And if we say no, then all we do is spend our time creating intelligent strategies for emotional survival. And if we say yes, then we get to create from our set sense of safety. In prayer, it's a place where we can find safety. And from there, we can go deeper. We can go into a place that we trust. And in spirit, there's always a sense that this presence comes to us that engenders trust and safety, that helps us to move from the sense of unsafety to a sense of being beloved. And then from there, all things are possible. That's what we call miracle. It's the clearing of the space between what we truly feel we want and all of the reasons why we tell ourselves we're unworthy of it, or we can't have it, or that it wouldn't be good enough. So it allows us to transcend all the distraction and all of the resistance that we have, and it clears that space. And it also gives us the message that if we're beloved and we truly are beloved and we feel that, we have already everything we need and we're complete as we are. And then going out into the world, here's the thing. If you want that and you're in this place of feeling beloved and you just say, I prefer that, or I like it, that's going to come to you a lot faster. Prayer is really about the intimacy of loving relationship, the essence of loving relationship, that no matter what happens in a relationship, you're still beloved. And when you feel that and know that, it changes everything. That's why people who have near-death experiences are not afraid of death, because they've been to the other side, and Thich Nhat Hanh says there is no death. And it's a change of frequency. If you're on a treadmill and you have a television in front of you and you keep changing the stations and looking at different shows and you're going on and you're on the treadmill, and then one day you turn the television off and you get off the treadmill and there you are. And that's what it's like to be dead. So you don't miss yourself. You're still there. Your consciousness is there. It's just a different window dressing, different costume. So I think prayer leads us to remembering our eternal selves and identifying with it, so that when we're out in the world, we're not identified with this temporal self that wants this and doesn't feel good if it doesn't have that. It simply reminds us that if we identify with who we are as an eternal self, that we can be in the world, and then love can pour through us without all of the negotiations that go on and stop us and resist us and don't allow us to simply express.
Thank you for clarifying that and defining it in that way. Yeah. And last question, which you may say you've already answered, I'm not sure, which is, what is something that people listening right now can do today to start amplifying their intuitive intelligence?
Good question. And two things is to go quiet inside, locate your attention in your heart, and just say hello to yourself. Breathe and stay. And you can ask any question you want and wait and be kind enough to yourself to trust what comes up, even if you don't understand it. And if, oh, that's a crazy picture I had. Let's think about that picture and just stay with that picture. Stay. Because when you stay with the picture and say thank you to it, it will start to unfold. It will start to give you more information. It will start to tell you more. So if you can trust it, and then the last thing is, you quiet your mind, you stay, and you trust, and then you act. If you get a feeling, that's it. And you think, oh, that's crazy, I don't need an umbrella, there's no rain, take your umbrella anyway. Not because it's going to rain or it isn't, but because you're telling your unconscious mind, you're telling your intuition, I'm willing to trust you, even if there's no evidence around that I should. Now I'm going to befriend me, and I'm going to trust me more than I trust what the evidence is outside me. And that's continual practice until the voice becomes so much louder that you can't ignore it. It's 2x4. Take that silly umbrella right now. And you're like, okay, I've done this. So you just want to stay with it until it gets loud enough that it's your best friend and not one of the people you listen to in the world.
Oh, that's such good advice. Now, I just wanted to ask you this question too, which has to do with your upbringing and the fact that you did go to mass, you said every day for pretty much the first 20 years of your life. And going to that meditation and prayer question, do you feel like during that time you honed in on a practice that most people really don't do growing up? But you were given those kind of tools. And even though it was under that dogma of religion, it's a practice.
Total practice. And remember that you're given these opportunities for a reason. This is my work. This is what I came to do in the world. It came to me early to start practicing. And you don't, because that's not what you're here to do.
That's right.
You didn't jump into a family of now 11 children and a mother who is a saint. And also I had this incredible opportunity as I went through life for my mother to make spiritual sense of things to me, because she was a really wise woman. I have an engineer, spiritual business mind, but people can just come from their hearts and do everything they need to do. And they don't need this. They don't need a method. They don't need to do what I do. They don't even need to understand any of it. They have what they came to do. And my desire in life is to support people in their essential gifts and in their purpose, not to help them do what I do. it's not about becoming more like me.
Totally. No, totally. And that, thank you for clarifying that. That makes so much sense. And you were given that at such a young age on purpose. Just like in my life, my father passed away when I was 12 and a very sudden heart attack. But I know now, right? I actually realized this in my early 30s and now I'm 48. That was on purpose. It was a tragedy and took me a really long time to make any sort of understanding of it. But now I know we work together. He's on the other, whatever you want to call the other side, or in a different field.
Absolutely.
That's why I'm doing what I'm doing today. Because, and I needed to have a full circle reconnection with him in order to say, this is possible. And there's healing that comes from it. And I want other people to know about it. That's what I experienced, which is quite different than what you did. But that's definitely to amplify my own gifts, just as you are amplifying yours, which I am so grateful for your gifts.
Because, right back at you.
Because some of us need that validation and we need that assistance in seeing it and getting to the heart of it. And I think we need different assistance at different times in this lifetime.
We are all needed. Everyone has a different gift because we need all of us. The community needs each other. And we're here to share our gifts. We're here to learn about each other and shine back at each other the mirror that will help us to find our own gifts and to be grateful for whatever those are and bring them to the table and honor everyone's gift, no matter how different it is, no matter how the voice sounds, because you don't know what a gift is until you stay long enough to appreciate and say, I don't understand this yet, but I'm going to stay here till I do. I'm going to sit at the feet of this mystery until my curiosity leads me to opening it and honoring it.
That's a beautiful way to end today. We have covered so much, and I'm so grateful that we are connected and that now everybody listening is connected to you and your work. And I just want to say that for more about working with Therese, find out more about her books and all of her offerings, please visit therese.rowley.com. That's therese.rowley.com.
Thank you, Robin. It's been an honor to be with you.